Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to the History of Video Games. My name is Wes, and I'm here, as always, with the wonderful Ben. How you doing today, Ben?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Wes?
I am doing great. Things are calming down at my job where I work at the university, getting a little bit more time for playing games. It's a good time, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like to hear that. I mean, what have you been up to? I think last time, what, you were playing Oblivion? I can't remember.
Yes. Still playing Oblivion Remastered, but I talked a little bit about Forever Skies, the co-op survival crafting game. Switching things up again. Last week, Doom Dark Ages came out, which is a prequel to the Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal games.
Yes.
Which I'm a big fan of both, and I know that they are on your list to play as well. But I had never beat the Doom Eternal DLC, and even though you can play these games without caring about the story at all, they actually did put like fun lore in these games. So I wanted to make sure I played the DLC before I went back to play the prequel new game. So I played through Doom Eternal Ancient Gods Part 1 and 2, and they were fantastic. I mean, it was fun just getting back into Doom Eternal anyway, because that game is so fast paced. Like, the designs for all the demons is awesome. The ridiculously gruesome glory kills where you just, I don't know, tear them to shreds, cut them with blades, take out the chainsaw, slice people in half. Like, it's so over the top, but that's what Doom does really well. Ancient Gods Part 1 adds some little mechanics in there, some new unique types of enemies that you need to deal with in certain ways, which were somewhat annoying, but some fun, and lots of fun challenges to do. I, you know, the Dark Souls masochist in me likes when they have those hard challenges that I gotta, you know, try like 5 to 10 times before I can actually beat this super tough fight. So that was really fun. But Ancient Gods 2, where the story culminates, that was my favorite, I think, out of the two. Like, the final boss fight was really fun. The lore of all this, like, heaven versus hell and demons and all this crazy stuff going on is just so fun. And the aesthetic, as always with Doom Eternal, of like, what if demons met like crazy technology and had tubes and circuits and all this stuff like coming out of them? Like, I just love it so much. It's so strange. And they give you lots of fun new tools and a fun new weapon to play with in Ancient Gods Part 2. So it was just so much fun, so epic, some funny cutscenes. They have good humor in there. And now I'm just holding off on buying it because I got a lot of games to play. But when I get around to Doom Dark Ages, I know I'm going to love it. It's apparently taking a slower gameplay approach than Doom Eternal, which Doom Eternal is super fast. But Doom Dark Ages is supposed to have, you know, you still have guns and stuff, and there's still probably technology, but it's supposed to be a little bit more medieval. Like, your character has a shield now that he can block with and throw. You know, of course, it has a chainsaw on the end of the shield that, like, tears things apart when he throws it. But it's supposed to be kind of like a heavier, slower version of Doom. And based on what they did with Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal, I'm excited for anything they do next, because it's the same team behind it. And they've just done some awesome stuff with the previous games. And now I know the DLCs as well. So it was so much fun. Yeah. Glad I went back and wrapped that up so I can say, oh yeah, I played all of Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal.
Nice. Are those DLCs free? Because I have Doom Eternal from my Amazon Games bundle, but I don't know if I would get those too.
I don't think they're free, but I mean, I guess it depends what version of that came with the Amazon bundle. You know, because if they were giving it away for free,
standard version,
it is just standard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they go on sale for like $15 for the two of them or cheaper or something like that. But I think you could definitely wait a while too, because I was very happy taking a break after playing through the full campaign of Doom Eternal.
Like,
that gives you plenty of fun. And these were fun to like come back and revisit. I don't know if you played them all in a row, I feel like it might be like exhausting, you know? So
gotcha.
I think maybe it's a good idea to play through the base campaign, enjoy the hell out of that, pun intended, and then get the DLCs later and come back and visit them.
Okay, cool. We'll do. Yeah. We'll do.
All right. Well, I'm excited to hear what you think about that when you get around to playing it. But what do you have to talk about today?
Yeah, so I basically, like, whenever I beat a game, I kind of use like an RNG random number generator to pick the next game that I'm going to play, right, from my unplayed games list.
Yeah.
And it landed on Dawn of War.
And oh, okay.
If you know me, which you do know me, Dawn of War is like in my top five favorite games of all time. Like, right. I love this game. And I've played it for hundreds of hours. So why is it in my unplayed games library? I think somewhere down the line, like, originally I bought Dawn of War on CDs, you know, like the good old media.
Right, yeah.
Of CDs. And at some point, I must not have had it installed and not had the CDs, maybe when I was at college or something, and I just wanted to play it, and I just bought it on Steam. And whenever I played it back in the day on Steam, I only played the new, like, the last expansion, because that's where, like, all the mods are developed for it. But then it meant that, like, the original game was marked unplayed in my Steam library because I had bought it just to play the expansion.
Right.
Even though I've already played the original campaign many times on CD, and it was marked as unplayed. And I looked at it and I thought, well, should I count this? You know, should I, you know, spend time on this? And I'm like, it's one of my favorite games of all time. You don't need to give me another reason to go back and play it. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to go back and play it. So, yeah, I played through the original campaign of Dawn of War 1, which kind of started the whole process. If you're not familiar with the game, it's a RTS, one of my favorite genres of gaming. And this is like one of my favorite games ever. And the base game is really good. The campaign, which is what I played, you only play through it from the perspective of the Space Marines. So you right. kind of play with the same faction the whole time, which there's four factions in the base game. So it would have been nice to spend some time with the other factions, but the campaign is only from the Space Marine perspective, and then it ends. It took me about 10 hours to beat it, and I played it on the hardest difficulty, but I love this game and I've played it for so long that even at the hardest difficulty, it wasn't hard at all. It maybe took a little longer to kind of steamroll the map, but I didn't have any problems with it. But yeah, I don't know. I just love this game. The whole vibe of it is so good. The voice acting is killer. I love the gameplay mechanics that they have. It kind of takes RTS, and instead of it being about destroying your opponent's base and kind of attacking them directly, there's these kind of resource points on the map. You can think about them like little outposts, or I don't know, like control areas, right? And if you capture those, which you do just by having a unit kind of raise your flag in that area, that's how you gain resources, like money and, well, I guess actually you only gain money that way. And so the fights are more around these kind of contested areas, not so much close to your base. One of my favorite parts about it is that the actual units that you use, they can kind of teleport in replacements while they're fighting. So if you can imagine, like, when you build a unit at the barracks, it might be like four Space Marines, and then they go out, but as soon as they go out, you can kind of add to their squad number. So it starts with four of them, but you can kind of add maybe a fifth guy and a sixth guy and a seventh guy, and there's a cap, but you can make them a bigger squad, making them twice as good as they were when they came out of the barracks. And then as they fight and they drop off, you can kind of replace those mid-fight, and they'll teleport in mid-fight, so you can kind of get like replacements in right away. It does mean that the battles feel a little snowbally, but I've always liked that mechanic, because you don't have to go back to your base to build new units. You just can do it right there on the battling screen, which is really cool. But you can also do that with like weapon upgrades and have some special abilities be cast and stuff, so it's really fun. There are things to do back at home and build up your armory and get vehicles going and all this other stuff, but it's less of a concern as compared to something like StarCraft II, where building units while you're not looking at the home screen is like much harder. But yeah, just the combination of the mechanics just fits so good, and I love the setting and everything about it. It's just like a perfect game to me, pretty much. So I do think the expansions add quite a lot more, but I was still in love going back playing the original.
Nice. Glad to hear that still held up for you and still was a good game. And yeah, like you said, any excuse to go back and play one of your favorites, why not?
Yeah. So I think There's three expansions to it, so I think the other two expansions are still on the unplayed games list.
So. Oh, okay. So even more reason to go back and play it.
Definitely. But yeah, that's something that I've been up to. But without further ado, Wes, we've got a special topic to get to, and this one is a bit of a special one. It's one that we do every now and then, but it's always one of my favorites, and it's where we each play a game that each other recommend for us.
Yes.
So, yeah. I don't know, like, how you said that, Wes. Yeah.
I'm excited about it. Did it not sound exciting?
I didn't hurt you that bad, did I?
You did hurt me a bit. So why don't I get started and tell the people what you told me to play. So
okay.
You told me to play Over the Hedge, the video game, which was for the GameCube. What I find the funniest about this is a game based off of a movie that you and I have never seen. And it's a game that you have never played.
Yeah.
How did you discover this one again? I forget what you had said.
I don't even remember myself. I think I saw it on a YouTube video. I don't even know how I would have found it. It must have been something like a retrospective on it from somebody, or like a worst games of all time list or something. I don't know how I found it. But as soon as I saw it and I was made aware of it, I immediately wrote it down, which I usually never do, and said, give this to Wes. So,
oh man,
you know, making good on that promise to myself.
I'm flattered.
I don't really even remember. It's been several months since I wrote it down, and I don't even really remember why.
I'm so flattered that you thought of me when you saw potentially a horrible game to play. But I will say, I mean, it's not great, but it's actually not that bad. The movie itself, I actually kind of want to go back and watch it at some point. It looks like it's kind of funny, but I think it came out in like 2006, so I feel like it kind of just missed the age where I would have wanted to watch it. But it's by like the same team or some of the same creators that made Shrek, so the animation looks kind of similar to that. I love Shrek. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point late in the video game version, Shrek just like randomly shows up for no reason. The movie is...
Wait, in this game?
I think so, yeah. I was looking up like who were the voice actors were for the game, because they are not the people who voice acted in the movie. And at one point Shrek was listed, and I'm like, what's he doing here? But I did not make it that far in Over the Hedge, the game. But the basic synopsis of the story of the movie is that like there's these woodland creatures that all live behind this big hedge that is blocking this kind of like gated community where people are living. And a raccoon voiced by Bruce Willis is like convincing them all to go steal some food from the humans to live large, you know, and get all the food they could ever want. And I'm sure other stuff happens, but that's the basic story that I got from it. You know, it's got tons of big names in it. It's got Bruce Willis, as I mentioned. It's got Wanda Sykes. It's got Steve Carell and a bunch of other people. But I looked it up because I was like, these don't sound like any of the people in the video game version. And yeah, it's, I don't think anybody from the movie voiced in the video game version, which makes sense. But man, the guy who's doing Bruce Willis does not sound like Bruce Willis at all for the main character, RJ. But the game is kind of this, I feel like it's pretty standard for some of these like video game movie type things where it's just like platforming, collect-a-thon, pick up things with funny theming. But there's just a lot of annoying stuff going on in it. The characters, the squirrel, which is this like hyperactive squirrel originally voiced by Steve Carell, it's just kind of yelling a lot all the time. Some of the dialogue does not make a lot of sense and like ends in weird ways. And the main health pickup in the game, because it's all about picking up food and snacks, is like chips. And so every time you pick up a health pickup, you just hear crunching noises. And you know, I don't know. I don't exactly have misophonia or whatever it is, but it wasn't great listening to those crunching noises all the time. But one really interesting thing about it is that it's actually different from the plot of the movie, because I feel like a lot of times these movie games are just a one-to-one rehash. They add in some weird side bosses and levels, but it's basically just the movie. In this, in Over the Hedge, the game, the tutorial mission is like a 10-minute condensed synopsis of the whole movie. And then after that, this is like 1 year later, what happens to all these characters now and just various adventures that they go on after that. So I actually thought that was kind of cool, but they're telling a new story with these characters instead of just rehashing the movie. And that is just the tutorial. That's the movie. So overall, I mean, it was fine, but it's definitely not a great game. Like, it's just, I don't know, it doesn't look very good. There's a different mechanic introduced every single level because they were trying to keep it different. So the game's never very consistent. And there's rats that are being mind controlled that swarm all over you that you have to fight for some reason. And your attack
is
either...
So it's like a 3D brawling game? Or is it more like a platformer or something?
It had platforming, but I would say 3D brawler is a good description, but it's not like an over-the-shoulder camera. It was like a fixed camera game. So like
Resident Evil?
Almost. It was better than that because the camera moved with you, but the camera angles were never good. Like, and especially when it's like you need depth perception and a good angle to figure out how to jump over this laser trap that's in front of you. And the camera's just not helping you. And there's no way to move the camera at all. So that was probably one of the most frustrating parts about the game for me. But one thing I do think it did really well is that, like, the cast of characters in the movie, there's got to be like 6 or 8 different characters. And once you get past the intro and you go into this little hub area that you have that you pick the levels from, you can just pick any character to go on any mission with. Their gameplay doesn't really change that much, but they have different dialogue. So if you were a fan of the movie, I could see that being pretty fun. The attacking is not very fun. It is just mashing one button over and over again until you get a special attack and then hitting that. But I don't know. It wasn't horrible, but it's definitely, especially not knowing the source material, there wasn't much for me to be gained by playing it for too much. But I did play it for as long as you asked me to, Ben. I think I played it for a full hour.
Nice. Good. And I can't remember. So is there like an overworld, or is it like actual just like linear levels or something?
It's just linear levels. It kind of looks like it's open world, but there's invisible walls kind of all over the place.
Okay.
At least as far as I got, which was past the intro, which took like 30 minutes maybe, and then like the first level. So, and they had mini games in there, but they didn't make a lot of sense. I don't know. It was an interesting just throw everything at the wall and see what sticks kind of game, I think.
Okay, cool. Well, that makes me happy.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I had a bad time playing it, but I don't think I'm ever going to play that again. But
unless I make you again.
Well, yeah, unless there's an Over the Hedge too.
We can only hope.
But I'm real curious to hear what you thought of my game, Ben, because I went the like total opposite direction and gave you a Sega game, the Sega Genesis game that I remember playing as a kid, and that's like all I remembered about it. I could like never get past the first level because I sucked at it.
Okay. Yeah, so you gave me Golden Axe to play on the Sega Genesis, which I believe was originally an arcade game. So it has some arcade game tropes in it, like, you know, put in another quarter, even though you're playing on the Sega Genesis. But yeah, so this is like a side-scroller beat-em-up type game. I have played games like this when I was young, mainly the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there was also an X-Men game that I played that was very much like this a lot. But I've never played this one, never even heard about this one. It's kind of got this like Conan the Barbarian type theming, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's surprisingly pretty short. I watched a full playthrough of it to kind of see what like the end boss was like and stuff. And it's only about 20 or 30 minutes long, surprisingly. I think it has 8 levels in it. But when I was playing, I originally, on the main menu, the first option says arcade, and then the second option was beginner. And I thought arcade might be like free play mode or something. So I hit beginner, and apparently the beginner's like a tutorial, and arcade is the story. So I didn't know that though. So I played through the entire beginner, which was only the first 3 levels, I think, of the game. And then it just says, good job, you won. Try playing the arcade mode. So I kind of messed up a little bit. But I had fun playing it. It's, it's showing its age, we'll say, in terms of the gameplay mechanics, because, like, all the attacks, you're locked into the animation and cannot move when you're attacking.
Yeah,
I definitely felt that. It's also, like, a 2D side-scroller, and some aspects with, like, these 2D brawling games, it can be hard to judge depth at times, and you're like, I'm hitting this guy, but you're, like, actually hitting in front of him, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that happened quite a bit. There's a jump button in the game. There's really only 3 buttons. Just like you use your special attack, punch, and jump. Those are your three buttons. And the jumping was not good. And there was a section where you have to jump over like a pit. And I probably jumped into the pit like two times before I got it. But the actual graphics are really great in it, I think. I don't know if you can, what the style name is called. It looks too good to be like 16-bit or something. I would say it's like 64-bit or 32-bit or something. But it's like pretty high resolution pixel type graphics. The animations are a little jank at times. Like I think for the walking animation, it's just like a 3-frame animation that loops.
Right. Yeah.
Same thing with some of the fighting. But I love the aesthetics of it. Some of the monsters that you fight are like skeletons with swords, which I really love. You can hop on top of mounts, which was really cool and interesting. I hopped on two different dinosaur mounts. One of them just kind of wagged its tail at people and hit them. And the other one was like a fire-breathing dragon that you could burn people up with, which was really fun. There's some like really cool special attack animations. Like for the one, there's like three characters that you can pick at the beginning of the game. And for the one chick, hers just calls in like a giant dragon to just set the whole screen on fire, killing everybody. I was like, yes, this is cool. So there's definitely some cool theming to it. It's one thing that is kind of weird is how you get your health and like special energy back is kind of in between the fighting arenas. There'll be like these little gnomes with bags over their shoulders and you beat them up to get health and special energy back. I don't know why, but that's how you do that. And the game just kind of goes through 8 levels. Like I said, they're fairly short, I guess about 5 minutes each. No, less than that. So I was doing really well. In fact, as I mentioned, I beat the whole beginner mode, right? And then I started doing arcade and I was like, man, I beat stage one without even taking a hit. And it was at this point that I was like, maybe I just want to see like how hard it is to get hit, right? So I just didn't press anything and they were trying to hit me and couldn't hit me. And that's when I realized I must have been playing on invulnerable mode.
Oh, whoops.
The version I was playing, which I didn't realize. So I don't think I got quite the experience. I don't know how hard it is, for example. I can tell you, watching somebody else play through it, that the health system is kind of confusing because like you've got like 4 bars, right? Like let's say you've got 4 bars of health. You would think if you get hit once, maybe a whole bar goes away or it gets partially depleted or something. But instead, like, I don't know, you must have some kind, like, let's say you've got 100 health per bar. If you get hit and take 50 damage, the bar doesn't move until the whole bar's health is gone. So it was very confusing for like how healthy you are at a glance for this UI. So it has some issues, we'll say, showing its age, but I still enjoyed it.
Nice.
The music is pretty good, although maybe a little boring for my taste, but it definitely has lots of nostalgia to it. I don't know, just the palette, right, of the sound just reminds me a lot of other older games. So I enjoyed listening to it. But yeah, kind of a cool one. Not one that I knew, so thanks for having me check it out, Wes.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
I'm glad you got to ride the mounts. Like that was the main reason I remembered the game. Good. Yeah, and they look so cool. But nice. I wasn't expecting it to be fantastic, but I'm glad you took a look at it.
Yeah, thanks for having me play it. But yeah, that's it for a special topic for today. So why don't we take a short break and then actually get into some 1982 video games. Hello and welcome back to the history of video games. Let's start off today with actually some Game & Watch games, Wes, or one in particular. This one released November 12th, 1982.
Very specific.
So 11-12, which is why I was laughing there. But this one's called Game & Watch Mickey & Donald, which is an interesting hybrid crossover of like two different companies.
Yeah.
It's just another dual screen handheld, but I mean, I think it's the first one to ever have like, Disney theming. They might have actually come out with one that I think was maybe just Mickey before, but now Mickey and Donald. So Donald Duck's first game here.
Which is wow. Cool. Okay. Very cool. And it was cool enough that we did have some clones and licensed versions of it as well. Ones like Mickey and Donald by Futuretronics, by Intrek, by JI21. By O-Toys, by Pocket Size, by Trickatronic, and by CGL.
All right, but let's move straight into my first review of the day. It's our big one for today, or I thought it was going to be anyway.
Uh-oh.
It's called Frontline by Taito. This came out in November of 1982, and it's in my notes I said it's basically Call of Duty.
That's a big claim, Ben. Yeah.
It's an 8-directional shooter type game with a grenade throwing mechanic and a feature where you can hop into a tank and then blow stuff up with a tank, which seems pretty cool.
Nice.
So this was one that I was looking forward to it pretty much all year. Like as soon as I saw it, I thought, man, this is going to be good. And I was really, I don't know, I was just pumping myself up about it. And maybe that was part of the reason why I didn't end up liking it that much. As I mentioned, the basic gameplay is very much in that kind of soldier theming. It takes itself pretty seriously, I think, as far as not having like crazy looking aliens or weird monsters in the game. It's just you versus a bunch of other soldiers, and your main task is really just to run up the screen. I've actually seen this be called the first ever run and gun type game because of this mechanic where you can just kind of just dodge everything and not kill anything really just to get to the top of the screen. But it gets harder as you go up, obviously. After a certain amount of time of walking and kind of shooting things with your gun and using your grenade if you want to, you start to encounter tank enemies, and you can only destroy those, I believe, with the grenade or by hopping into your own tank and destroying them that way. And that's how I think it's meant to be played. Usually before you get to the tank enemies, there's a place where you can hop into your own tank. Your own tank looks kind of strange. It's like blue with a red turret on the top. The other enemy tanks are green, and that makes more sense to me. But they are a little bit more futuristic looking, I guess. They're like octagon shaped and don't really have tracks on them. But I thought it was fine. It still looked okay. But basically, almost the second half of the level, pretty much, you kind of go up with the tank and try to stay in the tank as long as possible. And I think there are other kind of tank spawn locations that you can get into if you get blown off of your first tank, which I think if you get hit, your guy kind of pops out of the tank and then walks around and you can jump back into a different tank. So that's kind of cool. But your main goal is at the very top of the level is like an enemy base with a turret at the top, and you have to destroy that base. I'm not sure if you have to throw a grenade in or if you can destroy it with the tank. But in any case, once you destroy that top turret, you kind of win the level. There's actually a cool animation of like a dude coming out with a white flag.
Nice.
Kind of showing surrender. And then you win. Yeah. So and then the whole thing starts over and you just do it again. But that's pretty much what Frontline is. It's a very combat oriented type game. But it's got some problems, so let me get into how it plays and how it controls. I think that's really kind of why I had problems with it. I kind of was coming into this thinking it was a two-directional shooter. So you've got one joystick for movement and one joystick for firing, right? But the actual controls of the cabinet were one joystick for moving, and then the firing was a dial with a button on the top of it, I think. And basically what that meant was you have to move in one direction, aim with the other joystick. Like if I was mapping this to my controller, which is what I tried to do, and then use a different button to fire, and I only have two thumbs, so it was pretty impossible to use two joysticks and hit a button at the same time. So I couldn't really use that.
Hey everybody, editing Ben here from the future. I just now realized that I should have mapped it to the trigger, and then the shooting would have been fine. But, you know, you live and you learn. I don't play any shooters on the controller, so that's my bet. But next time.
Now, I ended up using the mouse, and that controlled way better. But obviously, that isn't really, like, they didn't have a mouse back then. So I just imagine that the controls would have been very hard to use. And I have read that people have had problems with the control setup with this. I ended up going back to... like as I was playing this, I was thinking, man, why doesn't this feel nearly as good as QB3? That's like the last two directional joystick I played. And it was a prototype game. I don't know if you remember that one, Wes, but you were like on a sphere and you used this like explosive shotgun thing, like an automatic shotgun. Yeah. And I loved the gameplay in that. And in that game, like one of your joysticks was for moving, and then the other joystick would fire in the direction that you push the joystick. So if you push that joystick up, it would fire up. So you didn't have to press a button and hold the joystick, and it just made the world of difference. So yeah, trying to use two joysticks and hit a button is pretty hard. I don't know if it would have been better with the dial setup. Obviously, I can't really test that, but I found it pretty hard to control. So that's one part of it. The other part is your actual bullets, they only fire like 10 feet in front of you and then they disappear. So you can't snipe people from a long way away. You have to get up and close to them if you want to actually hit them. And the problem with that is if you get up and close with the enemies, well, then you're incredibly vulnerable because you're really up and close to them and they can shoot you too. On top of that, your character moves pretty slowly, so it's not easy to dodge. After a shot is fired, you're pretty much just a goner, you know? So I think it might be easier in the tank because the enemies, you can hit them from farther away. But as far as the gameplay goes, I didn't like the fact that the bullets disappeared so in such a short distance at all. It just made it feel horrible. So that wasn't good. You can also only fire two bullets on screen at a time. I don't think that made too much of a difference because they would disappear quickly anyway, but still, it's not like in QB3 where I had an automatic shotgun. So I don't know. Maybe QB3 has kind of ruined me. Cause I don't know. I was just kind of expecting that with this one. So yeah, I found the gameplay to be very unintuitive and kind of frustrating at times. Definitely very difficult. I never even got to the part where I could go into a tank, so that's why I'm still a little confused about how some of the tank mechanics work. I've only seen videos of it, so yeah, I did not do very well in this one. But there are still some good things about it, so let me get into my ratings and I'll talk about them, starting with the graphics. I think that's one of the high points of this game because the graphics do look pretty good. There is like a solid color background most of the time when you're playing. I think it's just like a dark brown, but there are some really nice things, starting with your character and the other enemy soldiers. The way they walk is just kind of hilarious looking. Their legs go up so high and like curve, like, I don't know, they've got like a clown walk or something. And it's just really funny to look at. Everybody has this kind of Asian armor, I guess you could say, to them, so they don't look like just generic soldiers. They do have a little bit of a personality to them. And one of my favorite things is that when anybody dies, they kind of jump up into the air and fall down in a very kind of comical way, which I like it a lot. So that was definitely one of my favorites. It's just kind of watching the people blow up. The tanks are a little bit less interesting to look at, but they're still good. And what I love about them is that when you hit an enemy tank, you see the guy that was inside the tank controlling it jump out and fall to the ground. same animation as the soldier, but it's just kind of cool to see it kind of being spawned from the tank. I don't know. So that was definitely one of my favorite things. You do have some background objects, some 3D-esque mountains and bricks. So they kind of show you a little bit of the sides and try to make it seem like it's got some perspective to it sometimes. Everything's multicolored sprite. A lot of it has some dithering effects and lots of like little nice details, like high resolution for sure. There are a couple like obstacles, like a bridge that you have to cross. I think at one point the background color kind of switches from like that brown to more of like a concrete kind of color and stuff. So there are some nice things with the colors and the graphics. Probably my favorite part, ended up giving it a 3.5 out of 10. I still think it's lacking in some areas, mainly in background like content. Like usually it's detailed, but it'll just be like green grass or like mountain, right. You know, and there's just not a whole lot of stuff going on really. So definitely some room for improvement, but overall I liked especially the soldiers, how they look. The base itself just kind of looks like a big tank and doesn't move. So the base doesn't really look like much of anything. But again, you've got some nice cutscenes like with the waving of the white flag. So that's cool. All right, let's go to the sound effects. I don't think I really talked about them at all. I didn't really like the sound effects, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
It does start off with a little chiptune, and there are some chiptunes that play in between the stages, and I like those. But they're pretty minor, and most of the gameplay is has no music in it at all. For the guy walking, the walking sound effect is like, I don't know, like a high xylophone or something. Like it's kind of high-pitched and dingy to me. I didn't really like it at all. It kind of sounded like, if you think about the classic, like how a skeleton walks, that's basically that sound. So I don't know, it just played the whole time and I found it kind of be annoying. And then the sound effects for the guns and the explosions just didn't really sound that impactful. They were mostly higher pitched and sounded like you're firing toy guns as opposed to like a real gun. So I didn't think that they were that that good either, really. I don't know, I didn't think the sound effects were really anything special at all. I just gave that a 2.75 out of 10 for the sound effects. And then finally, for the gameplay, I've already talked that I had lots of problems playing this game. Maybe part of those are my fault, but I ended up giving the gameplay a 3 out of 10. I do like that, you know, especially the jumping into the tank is super cool. I thought I would use the grenades more, or have to use the grenades more. I didn't end up using it that much, just because it was hard to aim. I should mention that, you know, it's an 8-directional shooter, but because, like, especially I think back to QB3, how that handled it, you know, you had a cone of bullets that you were firing in QB3, but in this game it's just a single bullet, so it ends up that you can't really hit a lot of things if it's not exactly straight in front of you or like 45 degrees to one side, you know what I mean? So I found it pretty hard to hit things, and that includes using the grenade, so I often didn't, unless it was, you know, something that wasn't really moving. So I don't know, it just kind of didn't pan out as cool as I thought it might be, and was definitely a bit of a disappointment for me, but it's not terrible, so I gave it a 3 out of 10. For relevance, I think it sold okay. There's people that have cabinets of it. The cabinet, by the way, has like terrible theming. Like, pretty much a blank cabinet for the artwork. I think it sold okay, but apparently it didn't sell very well in the US. It did better in Japan. So I gave it a 6 out of 10. People claim it's like the first run-and-gun type game. I don't really know what dictates a run-and-gun type game, to be fair.
Right, yeah.
So, I don't know. There's some historical significance here, but I didn't think it was that relevant. So I gave it a 6 out of 10. And overall, that left me with a 3 out of 10. Definitely a disappointment for me. I think, you know, on my own fault, I just was thinking it was going to be amazing. for whatever reason. And I think if it had controlled more like QB3, I would have at least been able to progress in it better. But the fact that the pool has disappeared was also very frustrating. And yeah, just didn't play as well as I was hoping it might. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that's frontline.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it looked really cool going into it, just having, you know, actual soldiers fighting, grenades, tanks, but that doesn't mean it always is executed that well, I guess, as we've seen. And it's, yeah, run and gun. Maybe we'll have to look up and see what the official definition to that is, because when I was looking at this one, I thought it was very similar to a game I played like a year ago called Strategy X, where you're scrolling up the screen, shooting a bunch of stuff, but you are a tank in that one, not a person. So maybe that's where the running part comes in. Who knows? But
you have to be a person to run.
Right. I guess so. Yeah. Hey, you don't know. That tank could be like Fred Flintstone powered.
Yeah.
But either way, cool. Neat one to take a look at. Shame it wasn't as good as we hoped it was going to be. All right, but then let's move on to some honorable mentions now. We have one here called Time Pilot by Konami. It was an airplane shooter game that's kind of reminiscent, honestly, of the old Atari Jet Fighter game. Like, you're just on this in the sky, but it's sort of a 2D plane that you're on, flying your ship around in circles, dodging and shooting other people. The main gimmick of this one is that every level was you traveling through time. So, like, you're shooting biplanes, then you're shooting fighter jets, then you're shooting spaceships. But it kind of just looked okay.
There were some clones for it, though. We've got Time Pilot by Century, Time Pilot by Atari, and Time Pilot by Karateko.
And then we have Satan's Hollow by CBS Software for the Atari 8-bit, a port of Satan's Hollow, which we know and love. But an honestly really good port onto the Atari 8-bit. Looked really good. It had the sort of like night cycle type backgrounds from the original game, and the enemies have their own mechanics ported over nicely. Obviously not as good as the arcade version, but nice to see they did a pretty decent job bringing it over.
All right, let's move into some Atari 2600 games now for November of 1982. We're starting off with Raiders of the Lost Ark. Pretty big title, obviously. This is an adventure-style game with an inventory and a time cycle mechanic to it. It wasn't particularly good, at least, you know, to us, but it was the first ever, I think, Indiana Jones video game officially licensed, so definitely had to mention this one.
Absolutely. And then the next one we have here for the 2600 is another first as far as licensed games. It's Alien by 20th Century Fox. Kind of crazy that they actually developed this. And it was just a Pac-Man clone, unfortunately, but it was based off of the, you know, popular movie and the first game to do so. And the Pac-Man gameplay is honestly better than Pac-Man on the 2600, so seems like a straight upgrade for 2600 players.
And then the last Atari 2600 game for today is Karate by Ultravision. This is a not very good fighting game, but it's the first karate-specific game that I've ever seen. It kind of played almost like the boxing games we've seen before, but it has that karate theming, so I thought it was kind of cool.
All right, and let's take a little brief segue over to magazines to talk about a new magazine we have in November of 1982 called Electronic Fun with Computers and Games. That is the whole title of the magazine. Very,
of course.
They had to spell it all out. You know, they couldn't think of any other way to let us imagine what it might be. But it's a very colorful magazine. It's got lots of cool stuff in it. The game that it had that we want to mention isn't super great, but it's definitely a magazine we're going to keep our eye on. The game we wanted to mention is Danger Down Deep by David Thomas. It was for the TRS-80, and it seems kind of like a dungeon crawler type game where you were descending levels, but it didn't seem like you could go back up levels. So it's sort of a gamble of like how much gold you could get and survive before you escape via other means. So kind of interesting, and for sure a magazine we're going to keep an eye on.
Yeah, definitely one of those where I feel like it's a transitional type magazine for the podcast, because most magazines that we look at nowadays, they have some games in them, but they're usually very varied in their topics. It'll be lots of business related programs and general news. It could be educational or programs like typing faster and stuff like that. So this one is just like a magazine that is just like, here's color and like all of your favorite video game characters and we want this to be a gaming focused thing, and that's all ahead, which is games. Right. So it kind of reminds me more of like what Nintendo Power is going to be, right? So hopefully we're getting closer to there and further away from the gigantic list of type-ins.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it'll be good to see some more video game dedicated stuff. Although yeah. This was a type-in in this most recent magazine.
But yeah, it was a type-in.
Someday. All right, but that takes us to December of 1982. We are in the final stretch here, and that doesn't mean we've run out of great games to talk about. 1982 still has some fun surprises for us. One of which, dare I say, is the first review that I did for today, Bubbles by Williams. This one has a very iconic and weird look to it, but it actually has some substance behind that. I was drawn to it just by, you know, this is so strange. It's literally a game about you playing as a bubble. But yeah, let me talk about it a little bit more. There actually is some knowledge on the history and background of this game, which also surprised me because it seems like a pretty obscure one. A guy named John Kotlarik at Williams wanted to make a nonviolent action game kind of in a similar theme to Pac-Man, that same sort of inspiration. But also wanted to have a game with an open playfield instead of being confined to a maze. And so with the help of an artist and developer also at Williams, a guy with a fantastic name, Python Angelo, they landed on a sink as the playfield and a bubble as the protagonist, which also let them, you know, with that theming, use this kind of space war momentum sort of control scheme they wanted to do. You're very slidey movement in this because you're a bubble sliding across the surface of water.
Okay, some ice physics or something?
Yes, ice physics. That's a good way to describe it too. Although in this, I guess it's soapy water physics. The cabinet art for this is pretty simple. It's just all blue with lots of bubbles on it. But it must be said that every single one of the bubbles has disturbing faces and arms, which they don't need, but they're there. The controls are on top of like this bubble man with his arms spread out so that he has a joystick coming out of each of his hands and the central one is coming out of where his nose should be. It's straight up disturbing, but the more I played this game, the more I was like, okay, I kind of like how weird this is. Like, we always like the weird ones, and this is for sure a weird one. But getting into the gameplay of this, as I mentioned, you play as a bubble floating in a sink. And your goal is to clean up as many crumbs, ants, and greasies, which are just little spots of floating grease, as you can to get points before they float down the drain in the center of the screen. You start as a very small bubble, but each time you pick up something that gives you points, your bubble grows larger. There's also enemies on the screen, like brushes and sponges, that will try to clean up the crumbs before you get them, and they also kill you if you touch them. Eventually, as you're collecting crumbs, your bubble gets big enough, though, that it gets a little more detail on it, and it has a mouth. And that is the, like, test for whether or not you can fight back against the enemies. Once your bubble's big enough that it has a mouth on it, you can bounce those enemies, the brushes and the sponges, around. You can just use that to get them out of your way, but if you happen to ricochet and bounce them down the drain, they disappear and you get a bunch of points, which is really fun. Every time you bounce an enemy, though, your bubble gets smaller, and so you might very quickly go from the range where you're big enough to hit them to the range where you're small enough they instantly kill you, so you have to be real careful when you're trying to bounce those enemies around. There are also cockroaches that come out of the drain periodically and swim in the sink with you. These cannot be killed unless you move over the cleaning lady, who shows up as like a random item. Once you pick up the cleaning lady, you have a brush attached to whichever direction you're moving. And it's pretty tiny, but if you are able to steer and hit a cockroach with that brush, you kill it and get some points and it's off the screen. On later levels, there are also, for some reason, razor blades floating in the sink. The razor blades, no matter what, how big your bubble is, or if you have a brush, they always kill you. So you just have to straight up avoid them. And the levels end when all of the points are either picked up or down the drain, so all of the crumbs, ants, or greasies. If your bubble doesn't have a mouth, like if it's small enough that it doesn't have the mouth on it yet, you actually lose a life when the level ends. I guess the idea there is because you're so small that you float all the way down the drain. But if you're large enough that you have a mouth once the level ends, you proceed to the next level without losing a life. And actually, when you get large enough that you have a mouth, you can exit the level by going to the drain early if you want to, just to, you know, get a couple points and avoid some of the dangerous enemies. So I hope that all made sense. It does have some Pac-Man vibes, but the enemies aren't really following you. It's really just the, like, eating dots portion of it that is very similar to Pac-Man. It's got, yeah, really interesting mechanics on how you fight back against the enemies. So I really like this one for whatever reason. So let me get into my rating and I will talk about it some more. For graphics, I went a little crazy here and gave it a 4.25 out of 10. Bubbles is an incredibly strange game, but it looks really good. There are some bland elements. I saw in like some reviews of the time people complained about the blue background for the water, because that is just straight blue. There's not really much going on with it. But there's lots of other things that make up for it. For instance, the faucet that's at the top of the screen for the sink is like the most well-detailed thing. Like, it feels almost like we're looking at the spaceship from Astro Blaster. Like, I don't know why they spent so much time on the faucet, but it looks really good. It's super well-detailed with all these like blues and whites. It has like a slow drip while you're playing the game of water coming out of it. The handle of the faucet actually turns at the end of the level, and like, I don't know, it's like a 3 or 4 frame animation of it turning that looks pretty sweet and has a nice perspective on it. And at the end of the level, when everything's going down the train, there's a stream of water coming out the faucet as well. So that part of it just like added to the weird atmosphere of it so much. And the level change animation is this big psychedelic swirl of colors wiping over the screen. That's pretty fun. And then all the sprites in the game look pretty great too. They're all multicolored. The brushes and sponges have little like eyes and faces on them, which I liked a lot. The ants and the cleaning lady are kind of just all right, but I really like your bubble character. It has this sort of like, if you imagine like in an animated show or something, like how like a slime moves, where like sort of like drags and squishes and like the back half of it is like stretched out behind it. It has that kind of effect as your bubble is moving, like a real bubble would move, which looks really good. And then the details on its face are, again, grotesque, just like the cabinet. But I love the like stern human man face that shows up on this bubble. It's pretty funny. And everything was pretty easy to see what it was, despite how crowded the screen could get. Cockroaches looked all right, too. So, yeah, just overall a great looking game, despite the blue background. And the drain in the center is a really fun addition, too. So it all looked really good. Moving on to sounds, though, that's probably the weakest point for this game. I gave sounds for Bubbles a 3 out of 10. They kind of fall way behind the graphics, unfortunately. There's just lots of beeps, some simple tunes, but mostly no music going on. I did like that before the cockroaches come out of the drain, there's like this banging noise of them climbing up out of it, which is pretty cool. And the water noise for the change in the levels isn't half bad either. There was enough sound going on that it didn't feel empty, but none of it was great. It was all just good enough. So that's why I landed on the 3 out of 10 there. Gameplay, though, thankfully, this played really well, too. Bubbles gets difficult very quickly. I don't think I ever got past the fourth level, but it is a lot of fun. I kept trying to get past the fourth level, which I think says something. For once, I really liked the challenge of the floaty momentum ice movement. Usually that frustrates me, but I think it fits well in this setting of being in the sink. And I also really like the different gameplay elements, like eating more to grow larger, to push the sponges down the drain was super fun. That's what I tried to do most of the time, even if it got me killed. Getting the broom from the cleaning lady to kill the cockroaches was a little tough since the broom is so small, but it feels really great when you do it and get those extra points. And I think having all the point pickups slowly move towards the center down the drain is really fun, too, because they're not in a set position like Pac-Man. You have this sense of urgency because your points are actively going down the drain if you don't pick them up fast enough. So it makes the gameplay feel more dynamic. You have to keep moving with them around the screen. My only real complaint was that it was hard, and I don't think that's necessarily bad. Like, you know, if I owned this cabinet, it would be one that I think I'd mess around with and try to master. So all that left me feeling pretty great about it, and I gave it a 4.25 out of 10 for gameplay as well. Moving on to relevance now, there's not a ton of info on this one. It's a really cool take on Pac-Man adjacent style of game, but it doesn't seem like many cabinets were released or purchased, so overall I don't think it's too relevant. I only gave it a 3 out of 10, but it definitely feels like a hidden gem to me, so overall I gave it a 3.75 out of 10. Unfortunately, I think the sound rating brings things down a bit. Bubbles could have easily been a 4 out of 10 game in my opinion, but I still had a lot of fun reviewing it. It has some awesome visuals, and its unique setting makes it something we've never seen before. The gameplay is familiar, but has some novel mechanics to it as well that I really enjoyed. And after playing it, I can say that the creepy bubble man on the cabinet definitely ends up being part of the charm, even if he is a little unsettling.
He kind of reminds me of Kool-Aid Man a little bit.
Yeah, yes. Similar vibe, just like a man's face on the... But yeah.
I don't know if I told you this, but I actually played Bubbles when I was at that arcade in Pittsburgh.
Oh,
they
did
had
you? Okay.
A Bubbles machine. Yeah, and I played it and I thought, man, this is pretty good.
The sliding, as much as I like it in this game, it definitely does get to be a pain and it's hard to control, but I bet this one played really well in person.
Yeah, it did. I quite liked it. So I knew that one would be a pretty solid one, even though it's so weird.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep it moving. We're going into computer games now again, now that we're in December. So some December computer games, or at least, you know, ones that we thought were so good that we should put them at the end of the year. Like this one, it's a game called Shadow Facts by Postern. It's a pretty nice side-scrolling shooting slash dodging game that released for the Commodore 64, VIC-20, and BBC Micro. It has Lord of the Rings theming, which is kind of cool. And it came out sometime in 1982, but I have seen dates for 83 as well. But with that being said, let's move into my second review for today. It's a computer game, and we don't do too many computer games, so you know this one must be kind of special. It's called Evolution by Sydney Development, and it came out sometime in 82 for the Apple II, DOS, and Commodore 64. And essentially, this game's kind of like Spore, Wes, if you know that game. Definitely a game I played a lot when I was younger. I still wish they would make Spore 2 or something.
I know.
It's so needed. But for those of you who might not know it, basically the concept of the game is that you start off like as a cell and kind of work up your stages in evolution, I guess you could say, to like more intelligent creatures. And the actual game Spore, I think you started as like a cell and kind of worked your way up, and you were kind of like making up your creature as you were going.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit different in this game called Evolution, where you play through 6 stages and each of them just is of a different animal, and it kind of, the intelligence of the animals goes up as you play through the 6 stages. So you're not making your own character here, but there's 6 stages and every stage is themed after a different kind of creature that you're kind of evolving into. And because of that, every stage is very different and plays very differently. So stage 1, you're like a cell, right? That's kind of how it was in Spore as well. But in this, you're like a cell, and it kind of plays like a Pac-Man type game, which the original Spore might have played a little bit like that too. I can't remember.
Sort of, yeah.
But basically, you're like a cell. There's a bunch of dots on screen. There is no maze. So kind of like Bubbles, you can just kind of move anywhere that you want. And you just have to collect all the dots while avoiding the enemies. There's like some bigger cells or like kind of buggy looking things. Obviously, on the Apple II, the resolution is not that great. So it's like a little abstract, we'll say. But yeah, just kind of collecting these dots. And if you can collect them all without being hit, you move on to stage 2. In stage 2, you are a frog now. So we've moved up in the world and now we're a frog. And in this stage, it kind of plays like a dodging game, I guess. I guess you're in the water still. So I don't know. It feels weird that a frog would be in the water, but you're in the water and you're only able to move on the bottom of the screen, which is like the seabed, I guess you could say. There's fish swimming above you, and if you jump and collide with a fish, they'll eat you and take you away. I think the fish can also kind of swim down towards you, and in that case, you'll want to jump over them. Because while you can move around left to right on the seabed floor, you have a jump button, and that's your main way to dodge in this one. But also in stage two, your main goal is that there's like, I don't know, it kind of looks like a butterfly to me, but then why would the butterfly be underwater? It's probably some like smaller fish creature or something. But you want to jump up and try to eat, I think, three of these little enemies just by colliding with them in order to advance to the third stage. So this one is pretty much just a, you kind of jump around and try to jump into certain things and jump away from certain enemies, essentially. But then you move on to the third stage. In the third stage, I think you play as a mouse now. So we're on land. And this one kind of plays almost like Dig Dug. So you've got a kind of a blank screen to start with. Imagine Dig Dug, when it's all dirt. And you kind of dig these tunnels. Now, as you dig these tunnels, there's three snakes that kind of, they'll spawn a little bit after you. So you have time to build a couple tunnels. And they will kind of, they, I guess they have like different AI to kind of navigate the tunnels. I don't think they're like trying to chase you necessarily, but there must be some kind of AI where like at any intersection, there's a 50% chance they go one way or another or something. So generally they do kind of get close to you, but to kind of mess with the AI, you want to create a bunch of fake intersections to just go to dead ends so that the AI kind of take those routes and kind of leave you alone. But as you're kind of juking out these snake AIs, there are, I think, acorns? I'm not really sure. There's like some treasure or something that you pick up. They just spawned randomly somewhere in the digged out section. So you don't even have to dig these out of the ground. They just kind of spawn in the open spaces every now and then. And if you pick up five of these, or maybe they're cheeses, actually. I think they're cheeses. After you pick up five cheeses, you advance to the next stage. Now we're in stage four, I think. Yeah, four. And this one you play as a beaver. And this stage plays like the game Frogger, which is kind of confusing because it feels like you should have done that when you were the frog. But yeah, you play as a beaver. And in this stage, you start on the left side of the screen. On the right side of the screen are some sticks to build your dam with. And in the middle are a bunch of alligators that just kind of move around and that you want to avoid. So imagine like a Frogger game, you just are avoiding these alligator heads. You have to go to one side of the screen to pick up a stick and then bring it back to your base. And then you have to do that like four or five times to pick up all the sticks and you're done the beaver stage. Then you move to the gorilla stage, which I feel like is a pretty big jump. But in the gorilla stage now, it's like a shooting game kind of where at the top of the screen, there's these monkeys that are trying to steal your oranges, I think, or maybe coconuts, I'm not sure. They don't really attack you directly at all. It's more or less like a timing type of game where the monkeys kind of will spawn from the edges of the upper part of the screen, go towards your coconuts or whatever, stay there for a second, and then move off of screen. And if basically if all of your coconuts or oranges get removed, then you lose a life. So it's just, can you hit them before they steal your stuff type of stage? And you're throwing rocks at them or something from down below. You kind of have a throw something straight above you and then 45 degrees to one side or the other. So the monkeys can kind of come in at two different places. So you're kind of juggling, going back and forth between these two different areas to prevent them from stealing your stuff. But assuming they don't steal your stuff, and I think you kill five of them, you move on to the last stage, stage six. You're finally a human now, and this game plays like Robotron 2081.
Oh,
or is
wow.
it 2082? I can't remember. But it basically plays like Robotron, and Robotron is like a two-directional shooting type game, and this is similar, where you kind of are in a big enclosed area. There's a lot of enemies on screen. You can kind of move around and shoot, and your main goal is just to destroy them. It doesn't play nearly as fast as Robotron does, but one thing it does have, which I kind of like, is that your bullets will ricochet off the walls, and they can hit you after they ricochet. And I think they can, I mean, the bullets are on screen a long time. They can hit off of multiple walls. I think you can have maybe upwards of three bullets on screen at a time. So it's a pretty fun stage, I would say. But after you complete the sixth stage, you kind of more or less win and you start the whole thing again. So that is Evolution. You've got six different stages, and they are quite different. Everything from Frogger to Pac-Man to Dig Dug to Robotron to a shooting game. Yeah, they're all in here. So I thought it was very cool, very ambitious, I think, but I really liked it. So let me get into my ratings for this one. Let's start off with the gameplay on this one. I gave the gameplay a 3.75 for Evolution. There's just so much variety, and it's all done pretty well, I think. From the Pac-Man stage in the beginning, all the way to Robotron at the end, they all just are so different and feel so different, but they're all like well thought out and make sense at the same time. I would say the weakest one's probably the frog one, because I don't even know why he would be underwater. Like, he's jumping underwater, which doesn't make sense. I think the gorilla one is also kind of weird, but overall, I think it's really well done. You get a lot more entertainment for like one game compared to most like Apple II games, which is just like Galaxian, right? So, or their bad take of Galaxian on the Apple II, so, or Pac-Man or whatever. This is like six games in one. So I kind of like that. And a lot of them are kind of unique takes at the same time. Like the Dig Dug one doesn't really play like Dig Dug, but it has those vibes. So I thought gameplay was pretty good. It was fun to play all the different stages, right? It wasn't too difficult, but had some challenge. So I thought it was good. For graphics, I ended up going 3.25 out of 10 for the graphics of Evolution. You know, nothing looks as good as the arcades. There is a black background for a lot of the pretty much every screen, but there's a lot of really cool sprites in this that I like. Weirdly enough, the fish sprites I think look pretty cool. There's even a striped fish, which is like a multicolored sprite. Most of the sprites in the game are just a single color, but the fish was not. So I like them. I like the alligator heads. I think they look cool, along with the beaver, who also has a little bit of a splashing water type animation movement of the beaver, which I thought was kind of cool. The gorilla looks really good. I say really good, I mean, he looks like a guy in a gorilla costume. So it's kind of weird, but I thought it was well done at least. And the monkeys look cool. The human looks good. He's like fighting space aliens. So it's just like the variety in here. The fact that there are some multicolored sprites. There's a good amount of animation for everything. It kind of just brings the whole package together. So I gave that a 3.25 out of 10. For sound effects, I gave this a 3 out of 10. There is some music, mostly in between the levels, and it's just a single voice music. I'm glad that it was there. Otherwise, the sounds kind of differ quite a bit depending on what stage you're on. Like the frog stage, not a lot of sounds going on. I think just when you jump. But like with the mouse stage, there's a sound effect every time you break a little piece of dirt. So that was kind of cool. I don't know. There were definitely some stages that were maybe a little quiet, but the fact that you had like a different piece of music between all the stages just kind of brought me to that 3 out of 10 line. So I gave it 3 out of 10 for the sound. Relevance, a little hard to say. It seems like it didn't sell well originally. You know, like I don't really have any evidence that people were playing it back in the day, but I think this is one that, you know, retro gamers have kind of come back to, and it's seen more of a resurgence in more modern times as like one of those hidden gem type games. So certainly people know about it. I ended up giving it a 5.5 out of 10. I think it's somewhat relevant for sure. Very unique, very different. So it deserves some points, even if it didn't sell well. So, but overall, I gave it a 3.25 out of 10. I think it's pretty solid. Maybe it's not like phenomenal. You know, being on the Apple II, it holds the graphics back a little bit. Even if you look at screenshots of this on other systems like the Commodore 64, it's pretty similar. So, you know, that doesn't help it too much. But overall, I thought it was, it's just so unique and different that I ended up liking it quite a bit.
Very cool. I mean, it's a good excuse and reason to just like put six different games in one, right? Like,
yeah,
I like the, even though that is not at all what the evolutionary chain really looks like, but I like the idea of getting to play as all those different animals. Yeah, that's cool. And nice that they did it well too, because they could have really phoned it in with that many different types of game. All right, very cool. Well, why don't we move over to the Tomy Tutor computer to talk about part two of our games for this for 1982. We didn't have month dates, so these are all the ones that we thought were pretty dang good and put towards the end of the year, or maybe we'd seen some 1983 dates for them. The first one we have is Traffic Jam by Tomy. Again, we've seen some 1983 dates for this, but this was basically Pac-Man with some pretty awesome graphics. It was themed as you driving around a city, and the buildings are pretty well detailed as well. But then the second one that we have here is my second review for the day, and that is Saurus Land, like Dinosaur, by Tomy. Again, we've also seen some 83 dates for this, but we've seen some 82 dates as well, so we put it here in December. Yeah, it's, I'm excited to talk about this one. It's really weird and interesting as well. The box art for this game just had some cute illustrations of a caveman whacking some dinosaurs and moles with a club, because it is quite literally a whack-a-mole game. And in the background, there's a volcano going off, which, as you'll see when I describe the gameplay, that's basically the whole game right there described right in the box art. So you do play as a caveman. You kind of walk out into this wide open plain with volcanoes in the background at the top of the screen. Periodically, moles pop out from the ground, and looking at the pictures, I think they are literally just moles. Like, they're not like dinosaur moles, or I don't even know. Maybe moles were around in prehistoric times, but I really don't think so. But anyway, these moles pop out of the ground. You have to hit them with your club. That part of it is just full-on whack-a-mole. Although the moles don't go back down. They just come up and then kind of hang out until you smack them in the head. But there are also two other enemies on screen to contend with. There is a mammoth and a T-Rex looking kind of dinosaur that show up. They just kind of move around the screen aimlessly, sort of coming towards you, but not directly following you. And if they run into you, they kill you instantly. But if you hit them with your club before they reach you, you get more points. There can only be one T-Rex and one mammoth on screen at the same time. So once you kill the T-Rex, another one will spawn. And once you kill the mammoth, another one of them will spawn as well after a certain period of time. After you've been doing this for a little bit, I'm not too sure if it changes every round or if it's on a set amount of time based on your difficulty setting, but volcanoes will start erupting. This is actually really fun because when the volcanoes erupt, the dinosaurs run off screen and all the moles go back underground. And it kind of changes to a second phase where it becomes a dodging game where there's fireballs coming down from the top of the screen that tend to stay where they are when they come down, but they can move side to side as well, so you have to dodge them. After a while, the volcanoes stop and more moles and dinos appear, and this just kind of keeps looping until you lose all of your lives. As I briefly mentioned, there is difficulty setting on this. There is a pro and an amateur mode. Just looks like it changes the speed of the enemies, basically, and how often the volcano erupts. To control your character, you can move in four directions up and down the screen. It sort of looks like there should be perspective, but in effect, it doesn't really matter. You're just moving up and down the screen, fighting all these things and dodging the fireballs. That's the basic gameplay of this. There's not too much going on for the gameplay, but let me get into my ratings now to talk about it. For graphics, I gave this a 3 out of 10. This is pretty great looking for a computer. I mean, Tomy Tutor is pretty sweet. It's still pixely, but I liked a lot of things about it. There's a lot of great colors with the green field, some little details with browns and reds on the volcanoes, different colors for the mammoth, who's black, and the dinosaur that is bright pink, as well as the little dirt patches that the moles come out of. Your caveman also looks pretty good. He's got a classic sort of like toga on him, a black toga, and has a, you know, eyes and a mouth, I think, and hair. There's also a fun animation of him turning pale into a ghost with a halo and rising to the heavens whenever he dies, which is pretty great. Your character is the only multicolored sprite. I mean, there's the background with the volcano that's multicolored, but everything else is just a solid color with, you know, like the eyes just being blank so that the eyes are whatever color the background is. But there's so many colors on screen that I didn't really mind that too much. The eruption looks pretty decent too. You know, big fire coming out of the top of the volcanoes. The fireballs come down the screen. Don't look so great, but with everything else combined, it's just a lot of nice color going on that I really appreciated.
Like a different type of color palette too. I feel like it's more like a pastel kind of color palette, which I kind of like.
Yeah, it's not as like sort of bright and harsh, like neon-y as some of the other computers that we've seen. This one definitely has a little bit more of a softer tone to it. And yeah, it kind of makes the shading and everything, or like the detail in the volcano, like it looks real nice. For sounds, I only gave this a 2 out of 10. The sounds in Sora's Land are pretty simple. Lots of beeps and noises for dinosaurs walking. There's some loud sort of blaring noises for the eruption. All of it works fine, and the game feels pretty full, but there's no music, and none of it was great, so I couldn't go too high on it. Moving on to the gameplay now, I gave this a 2.75 out of 10. The game is a pretty neat whack-a-mole game. It's got the volcano dodging stage mixed in there as well, so I appreciate that there's two different types of gameplay. But that's kind of all there is to it. I mean, the dinosaur and the mammoth don't have any attacks. They don't swipe at you, they just run into you and just kind of randomly run around the screen, and the moles stay out of their holes when they appear, except for when a volcano erupts. So like, it's not even like the guessing game or race aspect of whack-a-mole. It's just wait till all the moles are up and then start hitting them anyway. So that took away a little bit of the fun for me. I wish they went back down and you had a chance to miss them. Still, the general gameplay is pretty solid. I enjoyed it. It played well. It's fun to swing your club at stuff and get points, but there just wasn't a lot of replayability. There's not tons going on here. For relevance, I gave this a 4 out of 10. It's a pretty original game on the Tomy Tuner, and it's got some fun ideas. I don't think it's going to be mega popular in the history of video games or anything like that, but it's still one of the first times we've seen like a literal mole whacking game. Like it's straight up mole enemies that you're whacking with a club, so that's pretty fun. And so overall, that left me with a 2.75 out of 10. The Tomy Tuner is still delivering pretty solid games, and I'm excited to see what else we get for it. The graphics are definitely the strong point right now, I think, with the sounds being a little bland, but if the developers keep thinking up more unique ideas like Sora's Land, I think there could definitely be some bangers on this computer. Hopefully, if they make a Sora's Land 2, they'll have more than one actual dinosaur, because I realized after playing this that it's Sora's Land, but it's like mammoths, moles, volcano, and a dinosaur. but still, overall, it was a pretty unique one. It's fun, weird gameplay, and looks pretty good, too.
All right, cool. And I always kind of thought it was cool that these Tomy Tuner games are made by Tomy.
Yeah.
So it's all first-party games, so that's always kind of cool. But yeah, the last one we have for the Tomy Tuner today is called Mission Attack. Again, it was released sometime in 82, but I've also seen dates for 83. It's a simple Space Invader style shooting game, but with some pretty crazy visuals brought on from a behind-the-shoulder camera perspective, which is kind of nice. But that will do it for us today. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. We did Frontline, which I didn't end up liking that much, honestly, but it was still pretty cool to take a look at. Then we did Bubbles, which was a really good one. Kind of a Pac-Man fast-paced type of game about cleaning a sink. And then Evolution, which is like Spore, but in 1982, really cool and different. And then Sora's Land on the Tomy Tuner, a whack-a-mole style game. So a bunch of really cool ones in today's episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of great stuff. And we are in December now. We are closing in on the end of 1982.
Oh, yeah.
So we are so excited to have you listening, and we hope that you'll keep continuing listening as we go on our adventure through video game history. If you haven't, check out our website. We've got lots of great information there on some of the things we've covered before. Make sure to follow us on X to get announcements about our episodes when they go live. And if you have any questions you want to ask us, feel free to send us an email.
And with that, we'll catch you next time.
See you all next time.